You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Now it's Forsling to Ekblad at the line, long drive, rebound, they score, and it's Barkov picking up the rebound, and the Panthers take a 2-0 lead.
Look, Patrick's big thing when I got signed here, he's a big next man up mentality.
The boxing out that goes there, it's like prison rules in the playoffs, but it's not prison rules for the goalie.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01. Oh, my voice is just
dead.
Oh,
boy. Have you tried your voice today?
I have. I've talked a few times. 6:01.
Wow.
On a Tuesday, you are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. I will try and go around the round table here. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
How you doing?
Laddie, good morning to you.
Hello, hello. This is round one, Michael.
Intern Zach, good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. Halford and Brough in the morning. As mentioned, brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. We are also brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle. You get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
Ricola.
I thought I was okay.
Halford smoking darts before the show.
During the show.
We are coming to you live from the King Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, that's what you're waiting for. Okay, I feel like I'm back to a certain degree. Okay. We have a big show today. It is Elimination Tuesday in the National Hockey League. We'll start with the games tonight. So this is the last four-game set that we're going to get in these Stanley Cup playoffs. Did you enjoy it when there were four games on the docket? Good, because this is the last one. Leafs and Bruins. Bruins have a chance to eliminate the Leafs. Hurricanes, Islanders. Canes have a chance to eliminate the Isles. Avs and Jets. The Avs have a chance to dump the Jets. And, of course, in the nightcap, in the most important game of them all, your Vancouver Canucks up 3-1 in their series against the Nashville Predators. They have a chance to dump the Preds tonight, 7 o'clock. From Rogers Arena. As for what's happening on the show today, guest list begins at 6:30. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us. At 7 o'clock, Sam McKee is going to join us from Toronto, co-host of Leafs Talk on Sportsnet Plus. 8 o'clock, Brandon Batchelor. He's on the call tonight. 7 o'clock, Rogers Arena. Pre-game, post-game, actual game, all right here on Sportsnet 650.
When was the last game the Canucks played at home in Rogers Arena with a chance to eliminate a team?
Must have been 2011. Must have been Game 7 2011. Do you know the answer?
Yeah, it must have been, right?
Must have been. I don't think that they had the Flames ever up against it.
No, right? They didn't have the Kings or the Sharks either.
Nope. 2011. Yeah. Wow, it's been a long time.
You know what? I hope tonight goes better.
Yeah, I really hope tonight turns out okay.
Yeah. Better for the hockey team, better for the fans, and better for all the police cars.
Had to go there, hey?
Oh, we had to go there. So we got a big show ahead. We have a lot to get into. Working in reverse on the guest list. 8 o'clock, it's Bachelor. 7 o'clock, Sam McKee. 6:30, Greg Wyshynski. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. The big news from yesterday, not a lot of news. Canucks took the day off, did not practice. Rick Tocchet met with the media. As for who starts in Game 5 in net, whether it's Artur Shelovs or Casey DeSmith, Rick Tocchet told the media, I don't know who I'm going yet. It's an hour-to-hour thing with regards to who will be going in net tonight for the potential elimination game of the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, nor did he suggest or hint at making any changes to the lineup after the Canucks escaped Nashville with a 3-1 series lead, and they really did escape Nashville with a 3-1 series lead. There was a bit of a funny moment when he started talking about the forward lines, And he was like, well, you know, I'm not going to break up the Miller line because they've been so good.
Very good.
I don't want to break up the Lindholm line. And, you know, he praised the Lindholm line.
Can't break them up.
With Garland and Joshua. And then he praised the Bluger line, which left him with Petey's line. And he was like, you know, they're going to come. They're going to come. I fully expect it.
The Petey line. Yeah. They'll probably figure it out.
Yeah. On Pedersen, he said, the one thing Petey needs to focus on tonight, move your feet. Move your feet, and everything starts from there. If you're not moving your feet, you're hopeless. So don't think about anything else except keeping your feet moving, which is good advice for any hockey player, I suppose. Just keep your feet moving, and you know, that's how you open up passing lanes and shooting lanes, and it's oftentimes how you win, you know, races to the puck, that sort of thing. You got to move your feet. You can't just be reaching for the puck or standing still, because if you stand still, you know, pretty useless.
But maybe Petey is standing still so much because he's hurting, because he's got bangs and bruises, Jason. Bangs and bruises. So yesterday, Rick Dollywall, who we have on the show every Friday, hosted the Donnie and Dolly show on Czech TV.
He's bumped up. He's got bangs and bruises.
It was close. God bless him.
He
tried.
Wow. He's in a dark place.
Emo Petey. He's fully embracing it now.
How do you like my hair?
It looks great. Rick Dollywall had a report of sorts. I'll just let the audio speak for itself. It's a little long. Greg said, how long is it? A minute and 59 seconds.
I got
seconds.
It down to 90 seconds.
Look at you go. 90 pro. Seconds of an interrupted Donnie and Dolly. This is the latest on Elias Pettersson and his health going into game 5 of the Canucks' first round series against the Nashville Predators.
I will say this. He is not 100%. I don't care what
I totally agree. He can't be.
I don't think he's 100%, and in fact, I've been told he's not 100%. It's not a major injury, but he's got banged, you know, he's banged up like...
Did he hurt his elbow on a desk, buddy?
Oh, just stop. He's, like, a lot of these guys are banged up.
Look, hey, if that happened to me, I'd be playing
was
better.
I going to say he's got bangs and bruises like everybody else, and that's the boss. Huh? Bumps and bruises. Did I say bangs? Anyways, it's been a rough morning for me. Listen, he's got bumps and bruises like everybody else. I really feel
well,
he's
yeah,
not.
But there must be something more
okay.
to it than that.
Do you notice the Tocket never rips?
This is bad here. I know. It just kind of falls out
do,
of nowhere.
Do you notice Tocket never rips Pettersson postgame? Do you know why that is, Don? Because he probably knows what's going on behind the scenes if he's not 100%. I don't think he's 100%.
That's well, when I look at him not shooting, although Hockey Night last night.
He's had the wrist injuries. Over the last few years.
And the injuries as well. You are having a tough morning.
I'm having a tough
But Hockey in Canada ran the footage of him working on his one-timers.
Yes.
Yesterday, mm-hmm. from the day before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, if I had to guess, it would be his problem wrist.
Yes.
But then why would he be working on one-timers? Yeah. And then the other thing is, why did he play at the end of the regular season?
That's
what other
the one I don't
sat
understand.
Out?
They sat Besser, didn't take him to Winnipeg. They could have sat Pettersson if he's banged up.
Something's up. I'm sorry.
It is something's up.
He's
I don't
way
think
better
he's
100%. Than this.
And he's not driving play, and he's not a difference maker, but there's got to be a reason why.
Now, so wrist, which wrist is injured?
Far be it from us to make fun of someone mispronouncing something, but Ingies is an all-timer.
Is it the left wrist Ingie or the right?
I've been there before where you're just trying to get the word out and it's not coming out right. At the same time, Ingies is really funny. And we're going to be using that probably until the end of the playoffs.
You know,
he's had the wrist Ingies.
Yeah, listen, that doesn't add up, though, that this is all just a physical injury. I will die on the hill that this is mostly mental with Elias Pettersson, because if he's got the wrist injury, he can still keep his feet moving, right?
You got to shake off the injuries sometimes. You got to play injury.
Yeah. So, you know, look, we can talk about Quinn Hughes later in the show, because I do want to get to some of the other NHL news. But I think one of the most important things for the Canucks tonight, and really for the rest of the playoffs, because I'm sure even if the Canucks advance past the Nashville Predators, the book will be out on the Vancouver Canucks, is that you got to send the house basically at Quinn Hughes. Quinn has... still managed. He might be a little bit injured too, mm-hmm. and you know, he still managed to make a difference You know, made that terrific play on the tying goal on Sunday against the Preds. But he can't be 100% either with all the physical punishment that he's been taking. So, you know, one of the things I want to discuss today is what are some of the things that the Canucks can do to keep Quinn Hughes a little more healthy and keep the hits on him and the sandwich plays down on mm-hmm. him, because, you know, the Canucks need to keep Quinn Hughes on the ice and healthy. We're also going to have a discussion on who we expect to come out stronger tonight. Will it be the Nashville Predators, who are playing desperate hockey, or will it be the Vancouver Canucks with an opportunity to kind of, it's weird to say this, make up for last game, although uh-huh. they won the game, make up for the game and show some killer instinct and put the Preds away on home ice. But let's get to some of the other NHL news last night mm-hmm. because there is one more team that's been eliminated.
Yeah, happy trails to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are out of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the second consecutive year. A 6-1 defeat, yes, 6-1, to the Florida Panthers last night at Amaranth Bank Arena. What a name. On Monday night, it was actually a pretty tight game, and the Tampa Bay Lightning actually had two goals chalked off due to goalie interference replays. Alexander Barkov scored twice. Carter Verhaeghe, who's had an unbelievable playoff, scored twice as well. Panthers move on. They finally get over that hump of getting rid of their in-state rivals in the playoffs. So they move on. They'll take on the winner of Boston and Toronto. Though I think, though, unfortunately, as much as I respect what Florida did, and I think they're a very good team, the more interesting story here for me is what comes of this Tampa Bay Lightning team next. Obviously, the questions first and foremost in the aftermath were about the future of Steve Stamkos. Steve Stamkos is a pending unrestricted free agent. He wanted to get a contract done at the beginning of the year. Julian Brisebois, the general manager, shot it down and said, we're going to wait until the end of the year. Stamkos voiced his frustration, then kind of went about his business. I would argue that he was probably the best Tampa Bay Lightning player in this five-game loss. Here's what the head coach, John Cooper, had to say in the aftermath following his team's elimination at the hands of the Florida Panthers.
I don't know if there'll be much conversation. I hope not, anyway. You know, he belongs here. We know it. He knows it. But again, this is 2 seconds after a game, but he and I have grown up together, and he's a heck of a player, but he's also, I suppose in control of his own destiny, but I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, he feels like a Bolt for life, but only he and Julian can answer that one.
There was a very weird vibe afterwards because Stamkos actually stood on the ice for about a minute and had one of those like take it all in sort of moments, just watching everything. I know they weren't at home, but you know, he was just standing.
Didn't Bergeron do that once and come back for a year?
But Bergeron also did it and then left. He did it twice.
Right. Yeah.
The second time he's like, this is.
But the first one you stay, the second one you go.
Right. Now, I don't know what's going to happen here collectively with this team. You could call it a dynasty when you win back-to-back Stanley Cups. You're at least in that conversation. But this is now two consecutive first-round exits. They just continue to kind of run it back with fewer and fewer guys from the year prior.
Plus, one of those cups was a fake cup, too. Don't forget that.
Oh, please don't call it that. I mean, it was a bubble cup. Don't call it a fake cup. That's all right. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here because Cooper's comments, they were in the heat of losing. And he also went on an extended rant about goalie interference, which was 4 minutes long, and I'm not going to play the whole thing. But, I think the big story here is what's going to become of this team, because Stamkos is the face of the franchise. And if he decides to try and go somewhere else, I wonder what other exits could happen as well.
You know, I've heard the argument. I've even forwarded the argument that maybe the Lightning want to spend that cap money on a defenseman or something along those lines. But if they lose Steven Stamkos, they lose just so much goal scoring.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the goals they scored, they didn't score many goals in this series against Florida. So Stamkos had 5 goals. Brandon Hagel had 3. Braden Point had 2. Nick Paul had 2. And then Tyler Motte and Victor Hedman were the only other guys that scored. Mm-hmm. Like, Cirelli didn't have any goals.
Well, he did. They just kept getting called back.
Right, but he ultimately didn't have any goals. Anthony Duclair, who's probably going to be on his way out, didn't have any goals for them in five games. So I understand the whole premise of you don't want to give a 34-year-old guy like a huge contract. If he comes to you and he's like, I want a five-year contract. I don't care how old I'm going to be when I expire because I want the money. I want a big cap hit because I'm still playing like one of the top players in the NHL. I can understand the hesitation to do that because you're almost guaranteeing that that contract is going to go badly at the end. But if the idea is for the Tampa Bay Lightning to keep trying to be a contender, then they have to bring back Steven Stamkos. Now, Julian Breezeball and the Tampa Bay Lightning might look at things differently than, say, a team like Pittsburgh has, where they've kept the guys together and they've kept Malkin and they've kept Letang and, you know, obviously they've kept Crosby, and it hasn't worked out very well for the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And you're looking at the Penguins and going, I wonder if they regret giving Letang and Malkin those contracts, plus bringing on the contract of another old guy in Erik Karlsson. You know, they didn't even make the playoffs this season, and then it becomes really hard to improve and are really hard to, move bad money off the books if you have to.
Changing the guard in the NHL, right? You look at this and there's...
He might want to mix it up too, you know? Like, you might just say, like, I'm going to hand the team over to Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli, mm-hmm. and Kucherov is still there and still a terrific player, and he might want to address something else. You never know.
I mean, when's the last time that there has been no Crosby, Stamkos, or Ovechkin beyond the first round of the playoffs? It's been an awfully long time, but that's what we've got right now because the Lightning are out, the Caps are already out. Not going to lie, this first round hasn't been super competitive in terms of, you know, the games in a series. The only one that has, the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights, their series is now tied at 2-2 after the Dallas Stars went into T-Mobile again last night and this time won 4-2. So the road team has won every game in this series. This has been the tightest and most competitive of all the series. It was the Stars' second straight win on the road to even the best of seven. It's now a best of three. That one's been real interesting. I don't know how much you guys have paid attention to it, but I've been very impressed with Dallas the last two games. I thought that they might have flatlined after losing the opening two at home, but they've come back very well in a tough place to win as well in Vegas. So good on them. That series now tied at 2-2, best of three.
Did you mention the stat that I saw going around? Since starting 6-0, home teams in the NHL playoffs have gone 9-18.
Remember that brief flirtation at the beginning where it was like, no one can lose at home. It's the best. It's the best place to be. Well, Dallas kind of flipped that on its head, you know, in a major way, and then they did it in Vegas
as
well.
It is a little bit natural that it would happen that way because you've got, you had the sweep of the Washington Capitals. Yep. So, you know, naturally the home teams are going to have more of an advantage in the first few games because the higher seeds are playing at home. So the higher seeds, in theory, should be able to go into, the Canucks went into Nashville and won two, right? So in theory, that happens. But I think it is pretty remarkable how the home teams have struggled lately.
So there was a coach dismissal yesterday out of Seattle. Fairly big news. Dave Hakstol out after a couple years on the job. Kraken failed to qualify for the playoffs this year, finishing sixth. Boo, in the Pacific Division. And that was a year after they made it to the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. I was a little surprised by this one, more so when we got this audio from ESPN's Emily Kaplan talking about how there was a borderline player mutiny, a player revolt, had they have brought back Dave Hakstol. Here's what Emily Kaplan from ESPN had to say on the heels of Dave Hakstol being fired in Seattle.
Yeah, this one, somewhat shocking, somewhat not shocking. What I can tell you is that Ron Francis did not want to make this move. Dave Hakstol is now one of four coaches who lost their jobs this cycle who didn't even have their extension kick in yet. But I was told at the exit meetings with players, there was a handful of players and pretty significant players who made it clear to management, I don't want to play on this team in the future if Dave Hakstol is still the coach. And that forced them to make a change. Paul McFarland, an assistant, also didn't have his contract renewed. If they look internally, Dan Bosma, who's running their AHL team, you remember him from the Sabres and Pittsburgh Penguins, has a very legitimate shot. He's done a great job with Coachella Valley. They're heading into the playoffs. They just had a bye after the first round. But a lot of scuttlebutt I hear around the league is, can Ron Francis pry Rod Brind'Amour away from Carolina? That's a situation we wouldn't see come to fruition until the Canes are
So Ron Francis released a statement in the aftermath, and it was interesting because he pointed to a couple things very specifically. One was that the team was wildly inconsistent this year and a few too many losing streaks, quote, and losing streaks of significant numbers. And if you looked at the Seattle Kraken's year, it was peaks and valleys all the way. They'd go on crazy 7-8-9 game unbeaten streaks, and then they'd lose 4-5-6 in a row. And it just got to be too much for Ron Francis. So no shortage of guys that could line up for that job. I think Craig Berube is a name that's out there. You seem to think that he's
going to Ottawa. I think he makes sense for Ottawa, like a lot of sense.
But that is the 10th coaching change now that we've seen this season in the NHL. So one-third of the coaches were fired. And I didn't realize this until talking with a buddy last night. Rick Tocchet is now the second longest tenured coach in the Pacific Division.
That's crazy. So the vacancies are in San Jose, Seattle. Buffalo, of course, filled theirs with Lindy Ruff. The LA Kings have an interim in Jim Hiller. The Devils, have the Devils done anything? They've still got Travis Green as the interim.
Yep.
And St. Louis has Drew Bannister as the interim. And, you know, the elephant in the room is there might be another vacancy as soon as, I don't know, tomorrow? If the Leafs are dumped tonight by the Boston Bruins and Sheldon Keefe is fired.
Yeah, that's the big... I mean, there's a lot of talking points coming out of Toronto right now. But of all the games non-Canucks related right now, that's the one that people are going to have their eyes on. Because if Toronto bows out tonight, I mean, you've got to think that the changes will start behind the bench with the head coach. And then it's like, well, what else are we going to do?
I do want to go talk about this Seattle story. Did you ever take Dave Hakstol as a guy that would cause a mutiny?
No.
Is that just because of the way he looks, though? Because he looks like a nice man. He looks like a very nice man.
I think I classified Dave Hakstol as maybe the least polarizing individual in the NHL. It's like he's just there. He looks very handsome behind the bench. He's got well-coiffed hair.
Remember when he got hired and we were like, Dave Hakstol? Really? Yeah. Well, that's boring.
I've made the joke numerous times. He looks like Hugh Parkfield, who was Lisa's fiancé. They never tied the knot, unfortunately. But in the future episode of The Simpsons, that's the biggest thing
voiced by Hugh Grant, was it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never
burns the flag. He's got tears in his eyes.
I've never actually thought of Dave Hakstol beyond that. I remember talking to someone when the Kraken were doing well, and they gave a lot of credit to the assistant coaching staff, including Dave Lowry there, saying that, you know, they were the ones that were maybe doing a little bit more in terms of, you know, carrying the weight from the coaching front. It was a surprising hire when they made it. Hakstol obviously had great success last year, taking them all the way to the second round of the playoffs. But I did hear that some of the younger guys, including a guy like Jared McCann, who scored 40 goals a year ago and then was bounced all over the lineup this year, different line combinations, different roles, different deployment, that I think eventually the players just got tired and they felt like they really underachieved this year. As a result, Hakstol's out there looking for a new head coach in Seattle.
Do you think if the Jets go out to Colorado, there might be some conversation about Bones?
Yes, 100%. There's conversations right now about Bones. So for those that haven't been following this series, there's been a real divide between the coach and the players about what's gone wrong now that the Jets are trailing the Avalanche 3-1 in the series. Bonus says it's on the players because they're being undisciplined and they're not moving their feet and they're not winning puck battles. There are players, including veteran players, that are very outspoken about how the system and the style and the game plan and the strategy isn't working. They're not being able to shut down Colorado's speed, not being able to take them out before it gets to a point of attack. Like, how are these guys getting such a head of steam coming at us? Like, could we not deploy some people differently to slow them down? But the series has completely gotten away from them, and they've been bleeding goals consistently. So it does kind of go beyond, we need to work harder and be more disciplined, take less penalties. But there are major questions with Bonus right now.
If the Canucks were trailing this series, and like if they've played the exact same way, but they hadn't had that 12 seconds in game one, or they hadn't had the miracle comeback in game four, there'd be a lot of questions about Tocchet.
Yep.
Because he is still, you know, I listened to his media avail yesterday, and, you know, those are obviously two big ifs. Like, you know, if they were trailing, they're up 3-1. So I still think Rick Tocchet is a really good coach. I still think he's been, you know, incredible and deserves the Jack Adams this year. But, you know, he was asked about kind of like, are you thinking of making any changes? And he kind of just did go back to the whole, like, we got to win more battles.
Yeah.
you know, thing. And I'm saying that maybe sounds a little bit similar to Rick Bonus in that it's on the players.
The only difference there is that you don't have any Canucks players. Well, obviously, no Canucks players are going to talk out being up 3-1. But the one that all the Winnipeg media is harping on right now is that there are veteran players on this team that are openly criticizing the way that they're playing.
Right. Okay.
That's a bad thing.
That's a major difference.
Right. And yeah, Shifley's one of them. With Tocchet, you got to remember that there will, however this playoff ends, whether it's this round or the next round for the Canucks, or they win the Stanley Cup. If they do win the Stanley Cup, narrative might be a little different, but he's going to have the baked-in excuse that he was down to his third-string goalie at one point.
True.
Guys are getting banged up. His star $11.6 million a year center was giving him nothing on offense. Like, there's going to be a lot of stuff baked into the recipe here with regards to excuses.
Tocchet will also have this was a good learning lesson for us in the playoffs. We needed to learn some lessons.
Sure.
That Jets team is a lot different. Jets team has a lot of experience in the playoffs.
When you get dumped in the first round the year prior and your coach comes out spitting fire about how things need to change, and then the changes happen, then you go back to the playoffs and lose in kind of sad fashion again. I mean, that is going to get – that's going to get some negative attention on the coach, so we'll see what happens with Bonus.
It is going to be an awesome hockey-watching night tonight.
We regret to announce the following layoffs, which I will read in alphabetical order.
Hackstar, David.
That is all.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
It's his friend in Bachelor, live from Rogers Arena, calling Canucks games. It's his friend in Bachelor.
8:02 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough, the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour three of the program. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour three. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. To the phone lines we go. Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks, joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Batch, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We're good. Before we look ahead to tonight's game, we got to go back to Sunday. I got to ask you, what was it like calling that game, that comeback, that improbable victory for the Vancouver Canucks over the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, it was crazy. And it's interesting. When they scored at 2:47 left, I believe it was, in the third, I kind of had an inkling like, oh, they've got a chance here. Like, this could get really interesting because they scored early enough that they had plenty of time left. And, you know, then you think Sissons is going to score into the empty net and he doesn't. And then Besser with that tremendous play and the composure he had to put it into the net, you kind of felt like going to overtime that they weren't going to blow that opportunity. Although I know in Canucks history, we've seen last minute tying goals followed by overtime losses, but credit that Lindholm line for generating the winner and capitalizing on a pretty egregious defensive mistake, I thought, really early in overtime from the Predators to win the game, and now they've got a chance to win the series tonight.
Do you even dare to make a prediction on how tonight is going to play out?
I've got no idea. I could see it going one of a million ways. Like, you know, the Canucks could come out and ride the home crowd and get the early goal and kind of be front runners and force the Predators to chase the whole game. Or the Predators could score early and take the crowd out of it, or it could be a low scoring, tough battle throughout the game. This series has been so impossible to predict in almost every single way, including the fact that the Canucks lead 3-1, in spite of the fact that they're averaging, you know, well fewer than 20 shots a game. So I've got no idea, but that's the beauty of the playoffs, and the beauty of a game like tonight is, you know, that drama will unfold in one way or another, and we just have to wait and see how it goes.
Calling the games as you are, how noticeable has the physicality been on Quinn Hughes?
Very. And you can tell that it's taken a toll on him. And I don't think it's just on him. I think, you know, the Canucks, through you know, especially in the third period of game four up until the comeback late, but even at various moments in that game, I thought both of those teams in game four kind of looked like they hit a wall, and there wasn't as much speed, and players on both teams were making more mistakes, tired mistakes with the puck, I think. So it's been a war of attrition in this series for both teams, but, you know, certainly when you're a top player and Quinn Hughes can control the game when he has time to have the puck on his stick, you know that the Predators are going to want to take that time and space away and make him pay for it. So, you know, I think the reduction in minutes for Hughes kind of speaks to how much he's battling through it right now. But credit him after all of that to make that tremendous play at the right point to hold the puck in on the game-tying goal. It shows that he's a guy that's going to fight through and elevate his game when it matters the most. And, you know, you'd probably bet on him being able to do that again tonight on home ice. Especially in a situation now where Rick Tocchet can control the matchups again and potentially get him away from some of the bigger, more physical forwards on the Predators.
X's and O's, why stylistically, strategically, Tocchet, you know, gave a few ideas on how they can limit the amount of hits that Hughes is taking. What do you see as the biggest key to prevent him from getting smashed into the end boards as much as he has?
Well, it actually starts at the other end of the ice, because if you establish your forecheck aggressively,
right,
and you are the guy that's going in or the team that's going in and hitting the Predators defensemen and making them go back for pucks, then, you know, by the time they get it to center, they've got to chip it in and change, or they, you know, aren't attacking with speed if you're aggressive on your forecheck, and that gives your defensemen more time with the puck. So I think for large stretches of this series, it's been the Predators that have sort of dictated that, and that's why the Vancouver defensemen, including Hughes, have had to deal with a lot of that physicality and pressure on them. So if, you know, the Canucks can be more effective at establishing their own forecheck and preventing the Predators from transitioning the puck quickly out of their own zone, then that negates their ability to attack through the neutral zone with speed and you know, be that physical, aggressive team.
How dumb are Bruff and I for not mentioning more that Brock Besser scored a hat trick for the Vancouver Canucks on Sunday? We came in here on Monday, and then like halfway through the show, she was like, should we give Besser some love for scoring a hat trick? I understand why. Like the way that it played out, the story was the comeback and the improbability of it. And then there were so many other things that happened, mm-hmm, including Shelov's getting the start.
And in sports radio, often like when a guy plays well, it's kind of like, yeah, it played well. Like there's nothing really to discuss other than praise him. You're more focused on like problem solving,
but like a hat trick and the tying goal,
it's incredible,
with 8 seconds
incredible
left, and to have the patience and, you know, the focus to finish with time ticking down and not, you know, he's got a little bit of time but not a ton of time. It was just, it's an all-world performance from Besser.
He scores hard-nosed goals now, right? Around the net,
and I just feel like we haven't done a good enough job of praising him, so maybe you can pick up the slack for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is how he's played around the net. Patrick in game four, but he scores that goal where he gets buried in game three, and he's in front of the net screening on the Miller goal in that game too. So he's turned into a very effective net front presence, not just on the power play, but at even strength as well. And, you know, the thing that jumps out to me is the composure, first of all, as we alluded to on the tying goal. But, you know, how far he's come and how much he's had to battle through to get to this point, you know, all of the injuries and all of the tragedy that he's had to deal with off the ice. Now he's a 40-goal scorer, and he's scored a hat trick for the Canucks in one of the most improbable playoff comebacks in the history of the franchise. So you got to feel good for the guy who, you know, at times people were trying to trade him out of town last year. You know, to be that big of a part of that big of a win for the Canucks is pretty cool. And, you know, to see how much his game has grown and how much he's flourished playing with JT Miller this year has been pretty special and nice to see. And, you know, I talked about this earlier in the year, but, you know, coming into this season, if you had said that someone's going to score 40 goals for the Canucks and someone's going to get traded away, and, you know, those two players are Andre Kuzmenko and Brock Besser, I think a lot of people would have bet on Kuzmenko to be the 40-goal scorer and Besser to be the guy that was traded. So, you know, that speaks a lot to how well he's played this year and how much he's rounded out his game that he's got to that point.
Batch, have you noticed that whenever Rick Tocchet is asked about his defensemen or his defense crew, he just talks about how much he loves all the big guys that he's got on the back end, the big, tough guys with the long reach? And I just wonder, you know, about Zadorov's future in Vancouver and if Rick Tocchet is going to go into some team meetings and pound the table for them to try and re-sign Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah, I think he will, and why wouldn't he with the way that Zadorov has had a huge impact on this series, and not just in terms of physicality and defending, but he's chipped in on the score sheet too. And you can tell how much Tocchet values that profile of defenseman by the fact that guys like Zadorov and Myers have seen their minutes, you know, maybe not drastically increased, but certainly increased quite a bit in the playoffs. And, you know, Hronek for sure and Hughes to a lesser extent have had their minutes reduced. And, you know, part of that is going to be game situation. And if you're protecting a lead, you want your big guys out there. But, you know, you would think that with your top pairing, you would be chasing matchups and wanting those guys out there against the top players on the other team. And in fact, that has not been the case at all. It's been Soucy and Myers that have gotten a healthy dose of the O'Reilly line. And so it speaks to how you win in the playoffs, how you win in a hard-fought series against a team like the Predators. And this isn't to take anything away from Hughes and Hronek, because they've still been very important parts of this team this year, and they're going to be important parts of this team going forward in this series and in this playoff run. But it shows how important it is to have big, heavy defensemen that can still skate, that can still move the puck. That's still important, but that can, you know, bring a physical edge for you and can fill passing lanes and shooting lanes. And Zadorov has certainly done that very effectively, to the point where you're looking at the free agent situation this summer and saying, man, a guy that I never thought they would be able to keep, they kind of have to try and find a way to keep because of how much of a difference maker he's been for them in the playoffs.
Watching the lead up and then seeing Colton Sissons go in on an empty net, did you think that one was done?
Yes.
Yeah.
1,000% yes. Like I was like, oh, here we go. Well, it was a valiant effort. And then, oh, it's off the post. And then Hughes ices the puck. So you're thinking, oh, it's a defensive zone draw and they've got to put Shelobs back in, and how much time is left, and all those sorts of things start going through your mind right after. But yeah, when Sissons was cutting down the wall there and had that look, like, you never expect him to miss that. And I'm sure that's one that he's had a couple of sleepless nights since, thinking about the fact that this series could be tied if he had been able to put that in the net.
We're speaking to Brendan Batchelor, Canucks play-by-play man on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We've talked about trying to predict the unpredictable, which is this series, and you alluded to it earlier. Have you ever really seen anything like this where a team has, and I know you threw out the, what was it, chokehold or stranglehold on the series, the 3-1 chokehold, where it might be a little
stranglehold.
Bit of a stranglehold, a loose grip, if you will, with 71 shots through four games. But at the end of the day, like, you look at it from the other side of things, the Canucks have a chance tonight to put this thing away. All they have to do is win one, and then whatever happened in the previous four games doesn't really matter, because when you move on, you move on. They don't ask how many, they just ask how, I guess, in this instance.
Yeah, I think it was Mitch Hedberg that said wearing a turtleneck is being like being strangled by a really weak guy. So it's that kind of stranglehold, baby, at the series. But
with itchy hands.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how you got here. The fact is, you're here. And especially with the physical toll that this series has taken on some of your top players, you know, to close it out tonight would be huge, especially because as you're looking at the other series and the potential second round opponent, the Oilers have a chance to do the same. So you don't want to get stuck in a long series with a physical team like Nashville if there's a scenario where the Oilers are sitting at home and putting their feet up and just waiting for you. So, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do it. I think like every game in this series, it's going to be hard fought. It's going to be close. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, it's going to be hard to predict, but do whatever you can to make sure that you don't have, you know, how did JT Miller put it? Like, that win the other night saved them 8.5 hours of flying time. So make sure that you don't have to waste those 8.5 hours on a plane back to Nashville if you can, and try and get the job done tonight.
Even though I just finished saying it's very difficult to predict what will happen next in this series, I'm asking about a prediction. Who will start in net for the Vancouver Canucks tonight?
I would guess she loves at this point, and this isn't with any sort of intel or anything like that, but he played well enough in game four that you can trust him. And if there's absolutely any doubt about Casey DeSmith's injury situation, then it's not worth it to throw him in and then be in a scenario where Demko is out for at least a few weeks. DeSmith could be out for a few weeks and you have no choice but to go to Shelov. So, you know, unless they're very comfortable with DeSmith's injury, very comfortable that he couldn't, you know, aggravate it anymore, and, you know, he feels good enough to go, I would go with Shelovs tonight just because the risk isn't worth the reward, I don't think, if DeSmith were to get hurt even more than he already has been.
Game five, the first elimination game of the series, goes tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Batch will be on the call. Reminder, pregame, postgame, and the actual game all right here on Sportsnet 650. Batch, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for doing this. Have a good call tonight. Enjoy the game. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you, too. That's Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I think we should do some What We Learns. It's awards season in the National Hockey League, so I'll start with What We Learned. We just learned that the finalists for the Calder Memorial Trophy, given annually to the league's top rookie, are in Connor Bedard of the Chicago Blackhawks, Brock Faber of the Minnesota Wild, and Luke Hughes. Yes, another Hughes. Of the New Jersey Devils, the defenseman version, are up for the Calder.
The other defenseman.
The younger one.
Did Luke Hughes have a like an awesome season?
Up and down. I saw from Devils fans.
He did play in all 82 games.
He has some very polarizing blunders, but I think overall he showed a lot as a
player. Yeah, rookie defenseman with 47 points. That's pretty
good. He led all rookie defensemen in power play points, power play goals, second in shots, and second in ice time. So he played a lot.
Mm-hmm. And there's no fans in Arizona to get upset that Logan Cooley got...
Yeah, they're in. And Utah are just figuring out who Logan Cooley is.
I guess the other guys that were kind of in the mix would have been a guy like Marco Rossi from Minnesota. But they already have Brock Faber there, so you can't have two.
Brock Faber.
We should make a song for Brock Faber. For the brief time where I know statistically and numerically he has a shot at winning this, but are the professional hockey writers just going to say it's Bedard because it's Bedard? Like, I don't know. I'm not a voter anymore. They stripped away my rights, so I'm not too sure.
It's probably going to be Connor Bedard, but I don't know. He only played 68 games. Faber played 82, 47 points as a defenseman,
He played 25 minutes a night.
25 minutes a night, you know. I don't know. If I still had a vote, I might consider Brock Faber. I don't think it would be an automatic in my book. Laddie, I'm surprised you didn't mention that Luke Evangelista should have been on this list.
Is he still considered a rookie?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought for sure you would have been over the limit in previous years.
Yeah, he's listed as a rookie on NHL.com. And A-Dog, I thought you'd be aghast that Zach Benson was overlooked with the 30 points he put up this year.
I'm just shaking
for the
Sabres. With so much rage that it's difficult to speak right now, so I'm still dealing with it.
Remember your
I'm working through your
brief flirtation with Zach Benson there at the beginning of the year where you were going to make that your thing?
I know.
Yeah, that died
too bad.
Quick. Yeah. You know, it's fine. Nobody cared.
It requires for him to score.
Evangelista played 24. Is 25 the cutoff? Did they keep him out one game last year intentionally just so he could qualify?
That would be amazing.
No idea.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, give us a mooka on that. I've got one, too. According to Frank Saravalli, Flyers captain Sean Couturier has changed agents. He is now represented by the big dog, Pat Brisson, at CAA Sports. That was me saying big dog, not big Frank Saravalli.
Yeah, right.
Sean Couturier does not need a new contract. He's already got a big, long contract. And if you think back on the Flyers season, when do you think Torts lost the room?
When he healthy scratched Sean Couturier.
Yeah.
That's a real question.
And we all said, like, you know, listen, we have an understanding, if not even an appreciation at times for John Tortorella's motivational methods, but sometimes you can go too far. And sometimes you can treat very important players on your team with what comes across as respect, Disrespect. Even if you don't personally see it, even if your attitude is kind of like, I see everyone the same way, right? And I don't care if he's the captain. I don't care if he's got a big contract. I don't care if he's, you know, coming back from a major injury. I'm putting the team out there that's best for the team. And I think probably the issue that, you know, the biggest mistake Torts made was not communicating with Couturier. And Couturier came out after. He's like, I haven't even been, like, told. I don't know if he just looked up at the board and he was like, normally I don't look at this board because I assume I'm in the game, but it looks like I'm not tonight.
I mean, I remember when this story broke and there were a lot of people into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket saying that this was just another example of a overpaid crybaby entitled athlete and that the coach has the say on ice time. And if you're a healthy scratch, you suck it up and then you get back out there and you try your hardest. And I have a very, very little bit of time for that thinking, not necessarily the way that it was messaged. But yeah, at the end of the day, if you're not playing well, and he wasn't playing well, no one is above a healthy scratch. I get that part of it.
But you have to communicate.
But you also, well, this particular instance is that you have to have more foresight, because when you healthy scratch a guy that got named captain of the team in February, you put him in a line of fire that isn't fair to him, especially when you don't discuss it with him beforehand. There has to be certain players aren't owed this level of respect. Guys breaking into the league are like, I can healthy scratch you and I don't need to explain it to you. That's your lot in life now. But your organization made a choice to call this guy the leader of the team. And with much fanfare, I might add. Mm-hmm. Like, the press release was talking about how Couturier represented everything that they wanted for this new era of orange in Philadelphia. And he fought back from this near career-ending injury. And now he's going to be the leader of your team. And then 6 weeks later, you're making him a healthy scratch because he's not producing enough offense.
So let's assume that Couturier changed agents to Pat Brisson so that he can get traded out of Philly. It might be an assumption. Who knows? Maybe he just wants Pat Brisson to try and get Torts fired. I don't know.
Maybe. Well,
but he doesn't need a new contract. And he's put it out there to a guy like Frank Saravalli that he's now represented by Pat Brisson. You got to assume he wants change in some way. 31 years old, a bunch of years left on a contract with a cap hit of almost $8 million. And it's one of those contracts that is signing bonus laden, which makes it tough to buy out. 31 years old, injury history. Is there anything the Flyers can do about this?
Yep. Fire John Tortorella.
Right.
I mean, that's the answer, isn't it?
Or move him to the...
When you hire...
Didn't they confirm that he was going to be behind the bench again?
That was before before Couturier went out and hired the most powerful agent in hockey. There's a reason you hire Pat Brisson. And I think, if I had to guess, it's going to go like this. Hi, Daniel, I'm Pat. I'm his new agent. You're either going to trade him or you're going to fire Tortorella, because it's one of the two. Either Tortorella goes or this guy goes. But they're both not coming back next year. And I know it's going to be a little more nuanced language than that.
Agents have so much control, especially one like Pat Brisson. It's like, we're going to make it pretty difficult in other situations for you guys then.
Go back over the course of this year and look at the amount of times that players have strong-armed coaches out, going all the way back to Mike Babcock when he was looking at their phones. How did that come out? That went right through the Spittin' Chicklets podcast.
They wanted to keep him on after that so bad.
But who won the battle? The players, because they didn't like it, right?
Well, it sounds like Dave Haxtell got...
Look what happened in Seattle, right? Everything was fine. Ron Francis wanted to bring back Dave Haxtell until the end of year interviews. And what happened? Players said, I don't want to play under this guy anymore. What happened? Dave Haxtell's out of a job. So I would say that the similar blueprint right now in Philadelphia is, hey, your captain and a guy you have on a really long contract ain't playing under this guy anymore. So you make the choice.
I just can't believe how badly the Flyers have lost their way.
In a year where they should have been able to...
Nothing goes right for them anymore. Nothing.
But they should have been able to take all the good that happened from this year and use it as a stepping stone, because they had a good year. They almost made the playoffs with a team that was terrible.
I would... I think the way it finished pretty much took out all the goodwill.
But up until that point. And why did they get to that point? It's because Torts made these really weird you know, I need to create confusion and chaos decisions, because he loves this idea of being constantly in an uncomfortable position.
What about Cutter Gauthier going like, I don't want to sign with you guys?
Yeah. All of this stuff, right? They had a good thing going, and then everything just sort of turned. And you could see it. You could feel it.
I just don't think they had that good a thing going. Like, I think you're overstating it, but that's fine. That's just my opinion. I understand what you're saying.
We had Torts as a potential Jack Adams candidate at one point.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, give us a moo cow on that. Get your What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line. I think Laddie might have one on the other side. I don't know about A-Dog. A-Dog is very busy cutting videos. We made him cut a third video for social media.
Yeah, this is,
and
this
he nearly went on strike.
Yeah, this is unacceptable.
You're like Sean Couturier.
I'm willing to work to a degree, but
A-Dog was
A-Dog.
Like, then I have to lift the mouse and the cursor goes over here.
A-Dog has hired Tyler Son as his new agent.
And told there would be no more typing.
He has got the worst tennis elbow you will ever see. It's from awful. All the scrolling he does on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just hard. So for all you guys out there at your construction jobs right now, out there, it's a little chilly this morning, and you guys are going to be working really hard at your jobs. Just know that A-Dog is with you, and he will be with you when he goes home to take his nap at 9:30
today. 4-hour nap.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.